Hello neighbors, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. Often we talk about pioneers in the past tense, as if they don't exist anymore. Fortunately, that is not the case. Today I speak with two folks who, in both principle and in practice, are pioneers, backyard farmers, homesteaders, and at the forefront of a movement in this province that brings joy to my sometimes weary soul.
I guess I started off thinking of this as self-sufficiency, and through, I guess, the rise of the homesteading group, which I didn't expect, I guess I've come to realize that it's mutual self-sufficiency and that we're all in the same big lifeboat. When you're aware of the input of food, one, you don't waste it, and B, you consume in proportionality. So I find that when I produce my own food, I eat less meat because you kill something to get meat, and that matters. Yeah. And I suppose before, in my old life, it didn't matter. I make more impactful decisions and more sustainable decisions because I'm the one that has to get my hands dirty.
Few ideas in mind and conviction in their back pockets. My guests this week moved from Vancouver over to this side of the country. In doing so, they've taken a step towards self-provisioning that many people only dream about. On their incredibly popular Facebook group, Backyard Farming and Homesteading, with close to 14,000 active members, they're encouraging others to also take small steps toward a greater goal. So we head out of town, take Route 10 toward the southern shore, just past Mobile, take a right. I know this sounds like a country song, doesn't it? Go up a winding gravel road that hasn't enjoyed road maintenance equipment for quite some time. When you see the ducks and the turkeys and the beehives and the goats on the porch, you're there. We meet the animals, check out the garden, and then head up the hill in the back for a view. It's a beautiful day in August with a lovely breeze, as you can hear. Join us. We're visiting Steve and Lisa McBride.
How long have you been here?
In this particular spot, three years. We moved out to Mobile 3 years ago from the city of St. John's.
Can you think of anything that inspired you to come here and start homesteading?
I think one of the things that inspired us most were stories from our grandparents. You know, well, Steve's grandma and grandpa are real storytellers, and mine have a lot of experience.
Growing up in a city, you know, in a very, very urban sort of environment, they were just stories. So I suppose for us, it was more a matter of how to experience those stories that almost seemed like fairy tales, you know, firsthand. Yeah. And that was sort of us making the transition from living in a big city to back again.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that desperation when you're in a big city and you realize that there's nothing you can do within that sphere, you have to make a real drastic life change in order to actually be able not to do the 9 to 5. You know, Monday to Friday, 40-hour week, especially in Vancouver. Yeah.
Whereas now you do the 5 to 9, 5 in the morning to 9.
I'm not up that early.
Okay,
that's true. But I do feel I work harder for myself on early counts just because of the satisfaction that comes out of it and the fact that when you put more effort in, there's more tangible results. And I suppose my old career in corporate retail didn't really involve that.
And you can pick and choose. So if you don't feel like doing something, then, you know, a little while later, you can pick something else up. Even the things that you don't really want to do, like I don't really like shoveling out the goat barn, even those kinds of tasks in the end, you know, when I'm in the next season over and I'm planting out my garden and I'm seeing the beautiful soil, then that makes the hard work worth it.
Now, a lot of us read Little House in the Big Woods when we were growing up and stuff like that and about homesteading, but we didn't necessarily take that step. You were inspired by your grandparents and just the stories and so on and so forth. Is there anything now that you would do differently in those first few weeks and months of homesteading? You know, you're moving from the imagination to the reality.
Yeah, I think it's been a pretty intuitive process, actually, really. I mean, the whole Little House in the Big Woods, I mean, that really is kind of the idea, I suppose. It's just with a little bit of a postmodernist touch, right? Sure. Like, I don't necessarily think we need to leave our technology behind to find our roots either. Right. So whereas we're looking to create a traditional homestead that might look a lot like an 1800s homestead or something with, you know, goats and ducks and other animals and beehives, I also think that there's a lot of room for the other side of things. You know, we can stay connected with things like social media. We have access to music and digital entertainment that we didn't used to have, and that helps it feel a little less isolating. I feel like all of my good friends and all of our fellow homesteaders are literally right close by because it's easy for us to stay in touch with them. As for what we do differently, gee, I don't know. What about you?
I think the way we did it initially was it was pretty good. We took a lot of baby steps to get where we were. Like, we didn't jump right in initially, and I think that's a mistake most people make is they think they can just jump right in. We started growing a small-scale garden at home in our driveway. We didn't drive at the time in St. John's, and we didn't need the driveway, and that was where the best light was. So we utilized the space we had in row housing. We got our goats down. You know, in St. John's, Goldie and Maple. We took them on leash walks. You know, got to know our community, and I don't really think that there's too much I would have done differently going into it. I think we moved really at a good time. We moved over the winter.
That's maybe what we did, I think. We moved up here, and it was just a set of circumstances that were a little beyond our control, but we moved up here in November. And being from the city and having all of the conveniences at your fingertips of city life, living in a small town up a gravel road, you know, for one of our first Newfoundland winters, really, was a challenge. But I suppose it was a necessary challenge because we did it, and that made us feel like, well, if we can manage that, the water froze in the toilet our first winter up here because the house wasn't insulated.
But like I said, everything has a positive on the other side. You know, Steve installed all the plumbing, so he learned what to do if it happened. So 3 in the morning, cut the PEX, replace
the pipe. Yeah, we had a line split at 3 a.m. one morning.
You know, and I was thinking to myself, if we were in the city and this was 5 years ago, I would have had to call a plumber. It's 3 a.m.
The emergency fees, you'd have to pay for that.
And we could
just do it ourselves.
You know, so that was really empowering as well.
So you've talked about the homesteading movement in here in Newfoundland and Labrador, and you have been a central part of coalescing that movement, I would argue, through the Facebook site that you've maintained. How big is that movement, do you think? Do you have a sense of it?
Well, I think there was a bit of a hardcore sort of base that I would say are people that are, you know, more dedicated homesteaders, and that group is fairly static, I think. But what I've really noticed is a bunch of casual DIY foodies coming onto the scene, and that has been huge. That has been a huge upswing of people that don't necessarily want to do the Little House in the Woods. They don't want to do the Little House in the Prairie where they maybe have all of their own food that they try to produce. But the thing I've noticed is that there's been a really big increase in the number of people that are interested in some casual aspect of their own food. So there's people that just want a milk and goats, and that's it. But it's important for them, and I think it's something I'm running into across the whole spectrum. It's important for people to feel connected to their own food, because we're currently so disconnected from it. A lot of video games now involve berry picking, and whether you're playing a game like one of those medieval games like Skyrim or something, the whole point of the game is to craft wild potions. You collect ingredients like spruce tips from the trees, and what I really think that suggests to us is the same thing that, like, when I was growing up in the 80s, what people did. What you do with your free time tells you what you're missing, right? And what I think happens there is that if you spend your free time replicating those activities, actually going hunting or fishing, or playing a video game where those things are the central parts, I think what it tells us is what we're missing. And when I started to listen to that, I mean, I guess this is where it led me.
Yeah. Is there a sim homesteader site, or, you know, some sort of game where you simulate?
There are a couple, actually.
There's
one game, actually, and this is something that tells me that it's real, because you know, like, I kind of feel like we're just out in the woods doing our thing. But there's a game called Stardew Valley that came out for, I think it was a PlayStation a while ago. Like, I occasionally browse video games and look at the content. And this one is neat because the whole point of the game is to keep bees, or to grow turnips, or to, you know, raise an apple orchard and collect the apples and sell them. Yeah. And it's basically like a charming old school video game that just involves running a little homestead. And I was impressed with the amount of detail. But the thing that blew me away is, if you're looking on those aggregator sites for reviews, they have 1,000 reviews or 2,000 reviews, like Amazon. They'll give them stars and ratings. Anyways, this one had hundreds of thousands of reviews, and lots of people playing, and lots of people just reviewing it and saying what a heartwarming thing. And to me, that told me that was something that people were interested in, because it's what they were interested in just simulating in their free time. And I think that tells us that there's more of a cultural awareness of, well, where does our food come from? How far does it travel? We're all interested in local food and stuff now. And I think that's pretty much what's driving it.
Usually I ask people if they have a song that they'd like me to play. Is there something that is particularly relevant?
Well, I'd say the mobile goat is probably the song that most people identify with us.
Have you heard the story of the mobile goat on the grand old southern shore? In the lovely Isle of Newfoundland, where goats don't roam no more. It's about a man named Dylan, whose cursing was of note, and how he was digging buds for 20 years or more. And every time he saw him, Dylan cursed and raged and swore. He was digging hard in his field this time. The goat was chewing away near a great big 6-foot granite rock. When old Dylan heard him say, "Are you digging them, Dylan? Are you digging them deep? Are you piling them, Dylan, in a nice big heap?" "Oh, I'm digging them," says Dylan, "not enough to fill a boat. But I'd be digging them more if it wasn't for you, you rotten, stinking goat. But I'd be digging them more if it wasn't for you, you rotten, stinking goat." Now Dylan got afraid of his life when he knew just what took place. And he said, "Good Lord, 'tis the devil himself come to snatch me from your grace. Come to take me for my sacrilege and my rotten life of sin." And he ran like mad down the hill to home, and the goat just pitched right in. But they say 'twas the priest just passing by when he heard old Dylan curse on the goat and the spuds and the Lord above for making all things worse. Just to hush the roars at heaven's above, he thought he'd bid good day. And as he passed the garden fence, the good priest he did say, "Are you digging them, Dylan? Are you digging them deep? Are you piling them, Dylan, in a nice big heap?" "Oh, I'm digging them," says Dylan, "got enough to fill me boat. But I'd be digging them more if it wasn't for you, you rotten, stinking goat. I'd be digging them more if it wasn't for you, you rotten, stinking goat." You could never tell Dylan 'twas the priest who spoke to stop his cursing spree. Quietly behind that rock so Dylan couldn't see. And to this day in Mobile, on that grand old southern shore, there's a thousand who believe the goat spoke out when Dylan swore. "Are you digging them, Dylan? Are you digging them deep? Are you piling them, Dylan, in a nice big heap?" "Oh, I'm digging them," says Dylan, "got enough to fill me boat. But I'd be digging them more if it wasn't for you, you rotten, stinking goat. But I'd be digging them more if it wasn't for you, you rotten, stinking goat."
That was Joan Morrissey with The Mobile Goat. Perfectly appropriate song for our chat with Steve and Lisa McBride, homesteaders and social media facilitators and goat owners in Mobile. We begin this section by talking about using nature to grow cycles of food that you can create on a homestead. Outputs become inputs, become outputs, and so life moves on.
We vermicompost, which is using red wrigglers to break down the soil. Super quick, but it has another key role, which I think is part of the whole sort of full circle of food, is that the vermicompost produces tons of worms, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them. And, well, my ducks and turkeys eat worms. Yeah. So basically the compost, the output product of my animals, creates the worms, which creates the food. And thus, you know, with enough input and with enough sort of, you know, tinkering on our part, getting it set up, that becomes a food system that feeds itself, much like how it would work in nature.
Yeah, yeah. Was there a moment when you were doing the Facebook site and there were so many people and there was so much discussion and so on that you wondered, what have we created? What have we wrought or whatever?
I think there were a couple of moments where we realized early on that we were setting the tone for something.
Yep.
And we had to establish at those points what the baseline is.
Yep.
And really for us, it's, well, what do we want to get out of it? And for us, I think me particularly, it was a community feel. I wanted a really respectful environment where people could feel free to ask questions, because I'm out here and it may look like I know everything about everything, but I started in Vancouver where I didn't have a garden at all. And these are all sequential small steps. So, you know, for me, the biggest message is you can do it too. We all can do it. And I think we're all going to need to do it as part of the food system becomes more unsure, climate change becomes more prominent.
Do you feel that those who are doing, you know, backyard gardens or whatever they're doing, do they feel a part of the whole process of increasing our food security in this province? Do they feel like they're a part of that?
I definitely think so. I think the homesteaders and the backyard gardeners, so to speak, are empowering themselves to grow their own food. And I think when we look at the thing that I've talked to a lot of people about is that we look at that number that's been floating around for a couple of years now that we've heard Dwight Ball say, that we've heard Food First and Al put out, which is that we import 90% of our food. So I suppose the challenge that I hear from most people is, well, I can grow 10% of my food. And if they can grow 10% of their own food, then there you go. That's it. That's more than what we already do. You know, so that basically effectively doubles our food output. If people, if the province is already producing 10%, people could have an easier time envisioning matching that. You know, so I think if you say to somebody, could you grow all your own food? I mean, that's a really intimidating thing when you think of the variety involved in what we need to produce to live. But can you produce 10% of your own food? Well, sure, that only takes one or two little hobbies. It can be gardening. Yep. You can raise a couple chickens for meat. You can have a beehive in your backyard. You can go hunting once or twice a year or something. And boom, there's your 10%. Yep. And then,
where's your goal? What's your percentage that you'd like to get to?
Well, personally, I'd like to produce all our own food, or at least be connected to people that produce our food.
Yes.
Because I recognize that I'm not a hunter. I don't fish. There's lots of things I don't do. But if I know somebody that does, and they do something that I don't do and vice versa, then we just work together. I mean, sure. I guess I started off thinking of this as self-sufficiency. And through, I guess, the rise of the homesteading group, which I didn't expect, I guess I've come to realize that it's mutual self-sufficiency and that we're all in the same big lifeboat, and that's a community effort, and that's something that that I sort of have grown into, I guess, and I kind of visualize now when it comes to producing our own food. But I realize that that amplifies us. The idea of producing all my own food myself is even us 3 years into the journey of living on an acre property out here in Mobile, it's intimidating, right? Mm-hmm. But when we had this little homesteader picnic that we had the other day, I made a cheese, I provided a couple bottles of mead, and invited some people over. And between us all, there was everything. Absolutely everything was covered, from the vegetables to the meat to the cheeses to the alcoholic beverages.
There was too much food in the end.
And all everybody did was they just brought what they do to the table, and the table was full.
That could be a metaphor for life.
How do you help people get over that hurdle of wanting to produce more of their own food and then actually starting to do that?
Well, I think that's something that begins at the municipal level, and I think that's what's missing. I think we do see a lot of support for farmers from the province, and I think that's where we're seeing some focus these days when we hear the province talk about developing our capacity for food, and that's really important. But I think what needs to also come is the grassroots level underneath it, and that needs to come from the municipalities. I mean, we're seeing stories of municipalities basically sending police officers to help enforce confiscation orders for a single chicken. You know, so I think when those kind of things come out, when people start hearing that municipalities are going to come for their chickens, I think when they hear that municipalities are going to say, no, you have to build a big house and live in it, that's kind of something that intimidates people and intimidates people away from their own food, because they think of their own food, and municipalities sometimes think of food as something that only happens out in the countryside. And I really think that that's our opportunity is to break down that barrier and say that backyard food is backyard food, whether it's a chicken, whether it's a carrot. Like, nobody restricts how many carrots you can grow in your backyard at the fact that you can. And what I really enjoy about the city of St. John's is that they govern bylaws by noise. So if I have an animal, the complaint against that animal is based on noise or smell or something like that. St. John's doesn't care exactly if it's a goat or a dog. It's the problem that's the problem.
When we talked about music, Steve had a second suggestion.
Yeah. Brawny R. Stomp by Led Zeppelin is also a pretty classic song about living in a cabin in the woods.
And, I didn't know it was about that.
Yeah. Anyways, it's kind of an old folk tale story. Kind of relate to it a little bit more than I used to.
Led Zeppelin with a song about country living, the Brawny R. Stomp. I'm speaking with Lisa and Steve McBride of Mobile. We start off this segment talking about what may keep people from getting more involved in certain forms of food production, including what we called the ick factor.
Are we afraid of, or some people afraid of the ick factor too? They keep kids away from all kinds of things related to life.
Yeah.
And, I think, you know, some of us just, we do it with ourselves too. Yeah. We shelter ourselves from experiences that might seem negative. That's one of the things that you can't control here on the homestead.
The
you never know when you get up in the morning if you're going to walk in and you're going to have a full devastation in your coop because a mink got in the night before. Like, so there's always that uncertainty, I guess, out there that you have to be prepared to deal with situations that you might not want to deal with. And I think, you know, or if you're actually taking an animal's life, nobody wants to do that. But I think that that's not supposed to be easy, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't, we all have to allow ourselves to feel sad, to mourn the life of something, because those kinds of things, they're not supposed to be easy. If they are easy, you shouldn't be doing that kind of thing.
And the ick factor is what makes it sustainable, I think, too. Yeah. Because speaking as someone that used to live in Vancouver and have no connection with food whatsoever, I would go to a pub for all-you-can-eat chicken wing nights, right? And I would just eat. What, you challenge yourself as a young man. Yeah. You know, I was 20 years old. You drink six beer, and you'd eat as many chicken wings as you could, because once you pay, they're free, right? Yeah. So totally different mindset. Mm-hmm. So I would eat 50, 60 chicken wings with no connection to the fact that that was 25 or 30 chickens. Those would have had to come off.
There was only two on each.
And then the idea of having to produce that myself. Like, I look back now and I think, well, let's say I wanted a plate of chicken wings. Let's say I wanted to eat 60 chicken wings for dinner, just like I used to do 15 years ago or whatever. What does that look like? And then it just hits me over the head about how unsustainable that is to raise all of those animals for all of their lives for one meal where you just pop all their wings in your mouth like it's no big deal. And I suppose the point I'm trying to make is that when you're aware of the input of food, one, you don't waste it.
Yeah.
And B, you consume in proportionality. So I find that when I produce my own food, I eat less meat because you have to kill something to get meat, and that matters. Yeah. And I suppose before in my old life, it didn't matter. I could eat 50 chicken wings, and if I wanted that many more the next day, I just had to go drop $20 on the counter. Now that I'm aware of the cost, it matters more and I do it less. I find that I make more impactful decisions and more sustainable decisions with my food because I'm the one that has to get my hands dirty.
Is there a crop or an animal or something that you'd like to get next?
What's next? I think Lisa knows the answer to this one.
Well, what we really want
what the heart wants is a horse.
We really want a horse, but, you know, we can't quite justify it. Everything on the homestead, it kind of has to pay its rent.
Yeah.
So right now, we're not at the point where a horse...
No freebies.
Yeah, a horse... Yeah. Well, the cat's a freebie, but he's a relic. You know, he's 16. He's from the old life. So
the cat's from the old life.
Yeah, he gets to stay.
What's your favorite local food?
Blueberries. I'm a blueberry machine. I love them in, like, when I was a kid in Vancouver, my dad's in the army, and in Richmond, a small little place outside of Vancouver, well, not that small, but he used to have big blueberry fields that we would pick, you know, and it was the only place we could pick free because we're part of the army that we could go back and pick free blueberries.
Yeah. For me, it's the cod, I think.
Yeah.
Out in BC, there was a lot of seafood in the diet, but it was completely different. Yeah. So, you know, salmon was a big thing, and I miss Pacific salmon. But I think the cod that we get access to out here makes up for it. In BC, the expensive fish and chips, if you went to a fish and chips place, was cod. You had to pay $3 more to upgrade to cod. Otherwise, you just got haddock or whatever, whitefish. So, you know, cod was always the treat.
So let's give the Facebook site one more plug. It's
Backyard Farming and Homesteading NL. And interestingly enough, the demographic is all across the board. So you can look at those little demographics Facebook now, and I'm really impressed because I see a lot of older folks there, which have you know, years of knowledge and the things that we need to learn.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of young people joining the group, and you know, the 12 to 17 group has been going up like this on a sharp angle upwards, and the 18 to 25 group, you know, so we're seeing a lot of younger people get interested in food.
And it's just a great central hub, because I mean, you can ask any question from what's wrong with my animals, or what do you think these paw prints are that are trying to get into my
identify
coop?
This bug, is it a problem for my garden? How do I my cheese isn't thickening up,
right.
How do I what do I do? So whereas there's a lot of like specialized little groups on Facebook for every possible thing you can imagine, what I really like about our little community is that it's everything food related, kind of in one stop. So
you're never sure what'll be there.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what that does is it really broadens people. People come for the carrots and stay for the honeybees or something. You see some really interesting connections where people end up in a totally different aspect, because they're simply exposed to it through, you know, they join the group for one thing, and then they're exposed to a whole different side of DIY food.
I'm very impressed with the community, but also with your monitoring of it, looking after it, and you never get tired of the pictures of Daisy saying, is this safe to eat or whatever, you know? But you also, there's a lot of issues that come up throughout the course of it that you handle very well, like you manage very well. And I can imagine that causes you some late nights occasionally to wonder how to approach that.
I definitely can credit my experience in diplomacy, I guess, with some of that. I do. I did get a little bit of background working with HR. And even amongst people that agree, there's different positions that sometimes lead people to argue with each other. And, you know, it's definitely a challenge trying to manage that. But I think ultimately the things we're able to put together as a community make those minor annoyances, just like the bug bites you get in the garden, right? Like it's sometimes the little issues that crop up are things you think, oh man, why do I have to deal with this? I just want to go water my garden, and now there's something happening in the group that needs to be, you know, diplomatically resolved. And
but I think it's rare to find groups on Facebook anymore that have a diversity of opinion, because you just split off into another group.
Echo chambers. Yeah. Everyone just retreats to their own little echo chambers, and I really appreciate it. And, you know, when you have a group where you've got people that slaughter their own chickens on one side and you've got vegans on the other, there's inevitably going to be some of them trying to force a viewpoint on a certain angle. And, you know, I really try to create an environment where as long as we're all in the DIY food boats, we're all going there in our own way and we're all contributing to the food that we're producing in the province. And no matter what our difference is, whether you're, you know, a backyard chicken processor or a vegetarian or vegan, we're all trying to produce our own food, and that's what we can agree upon, and that's what we can all move forward with, because ultimately I think all of those solutions are better than the centralized big business sort of monolithic food production system that we're kind of enduring now.
This is Monday, sort of middle late afternoon. What does a homesteader have to do the rest of the day?
Well, let's see, we've milked the goats, done the gardening today, I checked in the bees this morning.
I cleaned out the duck barn, but I have yet to clean out the turkey barn. I usually give them a scrape down once a day, so, you know, I'll do the ducks in the morning and the turkeys in the evening.
I have enough milk saved up for a cheese now, so my afternoon here is going to be making up a 3-pound wheel cheese.
Oh!
Not sure yet. I'm thinking I've just done a brie. I think I might do a Romano next.
Romano. Yeah. Romano's the one where you have to wait a whole year before you can try.
Oh, patience. Oh, my gosh.
It's a long game. I kind of try to mix up the short game and the long game with cheese, so there's always something coming up.
Yeah.
But next to that, we always put our animals into their different coops right before dusk, usually. Yep. I think that's it. It's just some video games after that.
Video games about a homesteading?
Actually, yes. That is what we're playing right now.
Thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, thanks for coming by.
Today I've been speaking with Steve and Lisa McBride on their homestead. Through their example and their social media presence, they've helped encourage thousands of backyard farmers and homesteaders in our province and beyond. I hope that you caught their enthusiasm for self-provisioning. When you grow and raise some of what you eat, you're playing a central role in our food security as a province. As Lisa said at one point, we can't do it all, but between all of us, we can do everything.
One thing I would tell anybody that doesn't know where to start is, I would say, just start somewhere and don't worry about how many times you screw up.
Mistakes are great. It teaches you what it is not to do next time.
Where you've got people that slaughter their own chickens on one side and you've got vegans on the other, there's inevitably going to be some of them trying to force a viewpoint on a certain level. People come for the carrots and stay for the honeybees.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. If you have questions or comments, email me at fittoeatnl@gmail.com. To listen to other episodes or for more information, go to www.fittoeatnl.ca. The music for today's show was The Mobile Goat by Joan Morrissey, and at least part of Led Zeppelin's Brawny or Stomp, as requested by Steve and Lisa. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was done this week by the Foghorn String Band. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
Everybody did was they just brought what they do to the table, and the table was full.
That could be a metaphor for life.